Rom says Nog can learn a lot from Chief O'Brien. Captain Sisko bribes Garak with a larger space to hem dresses. And asking a Ferengi to play a Cardassian game is like asking a Klingon to chew with his mouth closed. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Seventh Rule with Serac Lofton.
Hello, hello.
My name is Ryan T. Husk. Today, we are doing a review of Deep Space Nine's Season 5, we're almost at Season 6, Episode 24, entitled Empok Nor. We are joined by very special guest, Melissa Longo, because it is a Nog episode, if you can believe that.
Yeah.
And it's a good one. By the way, story by Brian Fuller, teleplay by Hans Beimler, directed by Michael Vahar. I wanted to look at who directed this one. That was really, really interesting to me. This was May 19th, 1997. But yeah, this was the second and final episode that has a story by credit with Brian Fuller. Really interesting crew. How you guys doing?
All right. How are you doing?
Yeah, doing good. It's funny because we just mentioned Mike Vahar, and you know, I just wanted to give him a shout out. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Really liked around the set. A lot of people had a good connection with him. And his son, Mikey, was also working with us in the camera department. So that was another cool thing, that the father and son type of combination.
No way. So, yeah, I was really interested to ask you about Michael Vahar, because after watching this episode, I didn't see who directed it, but I remember thinking like, okay, I need to find out who directed this, because I'm wondering if they're like, okay, this is like a total, basically this is a Deep Space Nine horror story, right?
Yes.
So I was thinking, did they seek out Mr. Vahar? Did they say, who would be a good director for this? Michael Vahar can do it. Or did Michael Vahar go, please, I want this episode. I would love it. I mean, do you know, Serac, if like they would specifically pick out certain directors, or if Michael did a lot of horror stuff in the past that made him the right candidate for this job? I guess I could have looked that up.
I know that Mike had directed other episodes in the past. So he was a recurring director. And the other thing that I know is that there was a short list of directors that they pulled from. So they didn't really just kind of go shopping for new directors every episode. It was a pretty standard list of the people that they knew and trusted, and maybe recommendations from some of the actors that they also knew. Because I think Avery mentions sometimes bringing in certain directors that he had worked with in the past to come direct DS9 episodes. And actually, when I did this show called The Hoop Life right after Deep Space Nine, that was in Toronto, I requested for Avery to direct one of those episodes. And so he was put on the slate for the directing of the new upcoming directors. So, it was pretty cool that I was able to, you know, get him on there, and we spent that time together in Toronto while working on another show. But that's a side note, but essentially lets you know how the directors are sometimes slated, right? It comes either by a high recommendation from somebody in the cast, or it is somebody that the writers and producers are already comfortable with. And I think Vahar has kind of established his comfort zone with the producers of this show. So, you know, obviously his son working on this set with us every day added an extra element of familiarity, because, you know, he was part of the crew.
Interesting. Yeah. You know, I was looking it up, and this was the second episode he directed for Deep Space Nine out of 7. So he's got 5 more on the way. But the one before this, his first one, was The Darkness and the Light, which we just reviewed, which also had a horror element. That's when Kira goes back to have her revenge, and then the guy with the messed up, Cardassian with the messed up face, captures her and she's pregnant. And so another interesting note, that is Brian Fuller's other story by credit. So I don't know if that's a coincidence, or maybe that maybe Brian Fuller wrote two kind of horror-ish episodes, and then Mike mm-hmm. Behar just happens to be more of a horror type guy for them, or if maybe Michael Behar and Brian Fuller knew each other in some way or something. But I don't know. But either way, that kind of paved the way for him to direct five more Deep Space Nine episodes, as well as 13 right. Voyager episodes, 11 Enterprise episodes, a ton of Babylon 5 before that. Anyway, lots of good stuff. Boy, this guy is really established. You're right, Soraka, man. This guy. Whew. MacGyver? Okay, this guy's a winner.
Yeah, and you can see the kind of old school television camera work that in this episode, like, yeah. you know, when the bad guy's in the background and they're like walking, and there were certain shots there that I would say, oh, this looks like MacGyver or A-Team or just the list goes on of the kind of things that they're standardized. Television when you see the back, you know, the bad guy and the lighting and all of this stuff. So yeah, like I said, Behar was on the list of directors to use frequently. This is the beginning of his journey on the list. I do think it's there's something to the fact that Brian Fuller is working on both of these episodes, so there must be some connection there. He must have, you know, be aware of his work and satisfied with his ability to pull off his work. So I think there's definitely some familiarity between them. And yes, I also think that it's good that we talked about this being a Star Trek horror, mm-hmm. because yeah. this is the month of October. We're about to, you know, approach Halloween. Right.
Perfect. Deep like, Space perfect Nine time. Did this for us 24 years ago. The foreshadowing, the foresight they had. Boy.
It's perfect timing. Yeah,
it is perfect timing.
What sweeties to hook us up with that. Now, this was obviously a bottle episode, and Deep Space Nine is so good at giving us a bottle episode that is aimed at saving money before the season finale, but that it's not like an obvious bottle episode when you're watching it. You're not going like, oh, this is just, you know, person A and person B talking inside a holodeck or whatever. It's like a big, exciting, you know, cool, heart pounding episode. And then you go, well, hang on a second. It was really three main characters. And it was the regular set, just, you know, obviously, you know, touched up and redone and relit and all that.
Oh, really? I thought they built a whole new set for M. Puck North. No, I'm just kidding.
They actually filmed it on location.
Oh, even better. I thought they were trying to save money.
But yeah, that's, you know, that's the what really did it was, you know, the music, the lighting, mm-hmm. the camera shots, the angles, you know, obviously the acting. We only had three leads in this, and two of them were not series regulars. They were recurring characters. So I really liked that.
Yeah. I liked it too, Ryan. And there's, you know, the other thing that I liked about it was, I like these unusual pairings, right? Because now we had Garrick and O'Brien with Nog. It was like, this is a combination we hadn't seen before.
Right.
And the lineup was interesting to me. I'm like, okay, how are these guys going to interact together? And what are, you know, we know that O'Brien hates Cardassians, right? He has like this disdain for them, right? He's almost racist about it.
He almost hates them so much he doesn't even call them Cardassians. Yeah. He calls them Kurdassians. The Kurdassians. I'm like, it's five seasons in and he's still mispronouncing it.
Yeah, and to his wife he calls them the Cardies.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's good that you pair them up together. Garrick is obviously aware of O'Brien's disdain, so he's going to keep pushing that button, just like, you know, you know what you want to do, you know, I know what's deep down inside you, I know how you feel about me. And so I like that. I also like the fact that Nog was there. There were moments there that were just really classic for me with Nog's character. He shows I mean, because it's a fearful episode, right? He looks out the window, sees the runabout blow up. I mean, like, that would be the first thing. I'm like, oh, this is over.
Yeah.
You know, but I loved his performance.
Yeah. Speaking of Nog, real quick, I feel like this was Nog's, as a character, this was Nog's biggest leap into the spotlight. I mean, he's had episodes with Jake and Nog where they were like possibly the A plot, you know, or a very strong B plot, but this was his biggest role now that he's in Starfleet. You know, in the, like when he was on the Defiant listening in, doing all this stuff, cool. But this was the first time this episode was carried by three main characters, right? The three of them. And he was one of them. And I don't think that's ever happened where Nog was one of the three main characters of the entire episode. There really was no B plot. It was just Garak has a few times, you know. Obviously, O'Brien has countless times. But this was Nog's biggest leap forward as a character, as somebody that they're going to be using a lot more in the Starfleet stories, it seems.
Yeah, I agree. It is his first leap into the, and I think it also is a great episode to demonstrate how far he's come and how far he still needs to go, because there's so much innocence in everything that he does. Until it gets real, like the scary bits get real, and then he, you know, when Garak goes psycho, but but yeah, it is his first real time as a main person driving the story along, which is really cool, and he knocked it out of the park, I think.
Yeah,
I'm gonna slightly disagree a little bit and just say that I think his growth really started with when he stood up to his dad and his uncle and said, I'm going to do this. I think to me, that was the beginning of me really saying, okay, this guy isn't got my attention. He's like about to break all cultural norms and do something different. What I would say though, in agreement to what you're saying is, for me, this is the biggest growth of him as a Starfleet person now, like after having committed himself to Starfleet, this is like me seeing him in the kind of action where it's like, okay, I get to see what he's made of, and the fear, the courage. I think he expressed all of that in very a real way that felt authentic to me, because there were moments when I felt his fear, there were moments when I felt his courage. I thought there was a moment, like for example, when they first arrive at M'Pok Nor, and the chief says, hey, we're going to have to go in there and, you know, and go crawl into the airlock or whatever. And Nog says, I volunteer. And the way he said it was like, it was courageous to me. It was like, he doesn't know what he's about to face. He doesn't know what he's up against, but he was willing to say, I'll go, you know, I'll put my life on the line to get this job done. So, and then when the stuff starts hitting the fan, I felt like it was authentic, because it wasn't like, oh, I can kick everybody's butt and I'm the best. There was fear there. Like, you know, it's just like I was having fear, like what's around the corner? What are they up against? Why is it so dark? Somebody turn the lights on around here.
Well, yeah, no, I agree with that too. And I think that his enthusiasm, as Garak puts it, shows his innocence still as well. He hasn't faced real danger yet in the way that he's about to face. And you can see that when he's practicing his stance with the phaser rifle.
Yes, that was so fun.
It reminds me of a little kitten, you know, practicing their pounce. It was playful, but you know.
He was wiggling his butt. before like a cat before the pounce.
Yes, and there's an innocence to it, and he doesn't know that that danger is literally around the corner, which is it's a great great character moment, I think, because he does it so well. It's so genuine, just like you said, and it's authentic, and it's wonderful to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great time watching him kind of jump around, ha, ha, gotcha, ha. Like that.
Yeah.
kind of practicing, kind of panicked, kind of, but it was a lot of fun. That was really cool. I do wonder, you know, like in the writer's room when they're throwing these ideas around, like if they have these moments where they're like, what about Nog? What about Nog in this? You know, because you think, okay, there's an O'Brien thing and then Garrick is there. Who should be? And they kind of like, what about Nog? What do you think? Yeah, I think that, you know, like, I feel like there was like kind of a moment where they're just kind of thinking who's a good third person. And, mm-hmm. you know, they might've thrown Rom's name out there because he's also kind of going in engineering and stuff, but they thought Nog's kind of a better way to go. And it's, you know, and I do wonder if it was just like a quick thought or a discussion or whatever, but there was that moment and we love it. You know, we think it's perfect. You know, it's such an iconic episode to me because I just love the idea of like this sister station. There's this other station out there somewhere that's just like Deep Space Nine that we never heard about, but it's there. It's just some old junker. And it's the perfect reason to go do it because they need to pick up some parts, you know. I really liked the idea. And I liked the execution because, you know, Deep Space Nine there was also that horror episode in like the second or third season with Bashir. Wasn't Bashir like imagining things or something like that? Or Bashir became the bad guy.
Started doing
the voice, the guy's
Bantikin.
Voice. Yeah, whatever
was it was. One?
Yeah, I don't even.
Where essence took over his body or something.
Yeah, and then it kind of flopped around. Yeah. But anyway, so they do these things every once in a while, and they're usually used as bottle episodes. And I was very happy with this one because it was very different than how most of the episodes go. I don't know.
You know what? I want to just go and highlight a few things about Aaron's performance in this episode. He really plays with lines and very small moments so well. And I want to talk about those little small moments. The first one that popped out to me was when he's in Quark's bar in the beginning of this episode, and there's that banging going on and there's clamoring. And, you know, they walk in and they're like, oh, God, let's go eat across the street. You know, Worf is like, I'm out of here. I can't eat it. It's quieter over there. And then Nog comes out from the background. Now, clearly, he's part of the construction crew. So he's doing some work. And Quark starts busting his balls a little bit. And the relationship dynamic has changed slightly, right? Where.
Yeah.
Right. You see, there's like. Not Quark talks to him a little bit differently than he normally does. He normally goes right to the bottom level, like, hurry up and do this and get out of my face. In this way, he was like, in this way, he was like, you know, you're fixing something over there, and I, you know, you are part of Starfleet now. And all right, so there's a level of respect that changed, and there was also a level of respect that changed the other way, like. Nog talked to Quark a little bit differently, right?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because there was a moment where Quark says, what do you need? And he's like, and he looks at him like two root beers, you know?
Yeah, that was great. Yeah.
I love you should have been like,
what do you think?
I was like, duh, uncle. Hello.
Yeah.
We need root beer.
Yeah. Like, you want to work here with, with no hydration? So I just like the play between there, and there's just subtlety and the way that Aaron puts on his performance that makes it so unique. It's like, you know, Ryan, you always talk about, you always envision how another actor would have said those same lines, or how you would have said those same lines. And to me, it's like Aaron says lines in a way where it's only kind of like he'll say it that way. He has his own unique way of saying something. And his nervous yes. mode.
Yes, I was gonna say that.
Is the best.
Where he has like his, he adds like a little nervous laugh afterwards, like, oh, just put it here. Like he adds that nice little nogism right there.
Yes, when he's uncomfortable and nervous, and he's like, you know, like I think there was a line there somewhere. Oh yeah, the chief was asking for a tool. And the chief was asking, he's like, give me that tool over there. And Nog's like, and he's like, I left it on the runabout, but I'll get it, sir. You know,
I mean, chief, hey, we do have to run to our break real quick. But let's talk about that a bit more because, there's a lot more to discuss there. We'll be right back on the seventh rule.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Everybody, welcome back to the seventh rule with Sorok Lofton.
Hello, hello.
And Melissa Longo.
Hello.
I was hoping we'd get a song. I was thinking about that yesterday. I was like, you know, back in the day when we'd introduce Melissa, she'd go, hello. And I was like, I don't know if she's done that lately. Let's see if she does it this time. But you did. And you hit the same note. God bless you. So Q, bless you. Sorry. So real quick, here are the trivioids, and then we're going to get right back to Nog Talk USA. Rom says Nog can learn a lot from Chief O'Brien. Captain Sisko bribes Garak with a larger space to hem dresses. Asking a Ferengi to play a Cardassian game is like asking a Klingon to chew with its mouth closed. Garak really wants Chief O'Brien to play in a game of Katra. Garak calls Chief the hero of Setlet 3 to get under his skin. And a flux coupler is not a coil spanner. Lastly, because there was that little mix up there, Garak finds a Katra board in the station commander's office. Anyway.
Yeah.
Back to Nog and his nervous chuckle and the things that he adds.
Can I add a little, just something that I noticed in Captain Sisko's office was the clock. From Babel was sitting in front of the window when they passed, he and Chief O'Brien and Odo were passing the window into his office. And I was like, that's the clock.
Wow.
It's in his office on display.
I love that attention to detail. That's so cool.
I do too. So anyway, more not.
Very good catch. I did not catch that at all.
Yeah, it's in the very beginning, like a minute 59, I think it was.
So. Yeah. Wow.
I didn't use the time stamping.
Yeah, you are.
But I have to agree with you, Sorok, where you said that only Aaron can deliver certain lines the way he does. Like when he was watching the ship explode and he says, that's not right. There was just something in the way he said it. It wasn't like, that's not right. It was like, I don't know. I can't do it because he's the only one who can do it that way. But it was perfect. I was like, oh my gosh, so good. So good.
Yeah, and I mean, his fear was palpable. Like, there were moments when you could feel his fear. And even there, even when he was in the little space there with O'Brien and they were fixing the conduit thing or whatever, and he says, yeah, you know, my uncle says that you can fix anything, you know, right?
Yeah.
And then they lay down and then the smoke hits them in the face. But I just felt like, I just feel like there's, you know, there's so many facets to his performance in this episode. He covers a lot of ground. So there's him in the beginning. There's no danger. He's just, that's his, you know, he's talking, he's kind of like, duh, to his uncle Quark, right, who likes to be the smartest guy in the room, but he's hitting them with the duh. And
duh.
Right, so he starts off with that. He's trying to flatter and get close to O'Brien, so he's got the, we see the kind of like, you know, siding up to him, like trying to be, you know, I think O'Brien said, that was smart, how did you know I needed that tool next, you know? And he was like, something about like, I pay attention or something to that degree.
Well, yeah. And so, I was so impressed by that too, because you could see him paying attention, and his attention to detail is so great. It, what a brilliant, subtle character trait to throw in there. It's not obvious. And I don't know how, you know, I like that moment too.
Yeah, and it's just once again, I think that showed his enthusiasm, because we did Garrick does highlight his enthusiasm in this episode. So I thought that was a great display of his enthusiasm. Like I'm already a step ahead of you. I'm watching what you're doing. You're going to use this tool next. So I'm already right there. But then his vulnerability, the fear and the uncertainty at certain moments when it was like, what do we do now? You know, and I believed, I was, you know, believing his performance. I just felt like it was great. The other thing was it was accentuated a lot by music.
Yeah.
Music.
And you mentioned that earlier, but I wrote it down in my notes too. I was like, well, the music in this episode blaringly good. Yeah. It was like, wow, this is good. Like, it makes you take note of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's a necessity.
Accentuating the scenes. Yeah.
It's a necessity in an episode like this. We a lot of times we don't realize it, but it can make or break an episode. If the music does not match or preferably elevate the scene, then it stands out as cheesy or hokey or a scary episode that's not scary or a tense scene that's not tense, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that they did match it and elevate it as it's supposed to. And, you know, we should definitely take note of that, because this is a show that's not known for horror. This is a franchise that's not known for horror. So it could very easily not play well. It could very easily show that this is not their niche, you know what I mean? But they did it just fine. They did it very well. And they should be commended for that, for doing something that's kind of out of their wheelhouse, but still knocking it out of the park. You know, it's important.
Yeah. The music. Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, it sets the tone so well. And I wrote down the music by, which I never do.
Oh, cool. Good job.
But I was like, gosh, I got to see who did this, because it was paired so well in this episode that I was like, ah, oh, yes. Nice.
Well, who did
please let us know. Just like, and I'm just gonna leave you guys in suspense. I'm gonna make you beg.
I'm ready to write it down. Yeah.
Jay Chataway.
Oh, we've seen
Jay
that name.
Chataway.
Yeah.
Jay Chataway.
So good. And I liked that it was suspenseful and nuanced but it still had the Star Trek theme under the surface. Mm. So it was, I loved the music in this too.
Great.
Yeah, I have to say this was like, it was kind of an Alfred Hitchcock meets Star Trek episode. We know, with the horror and suspense in there. I like the way that they isolated the crew based on looking for a part, because there was moments there I was like, how come there's not a doctor? You know, when somebody gets hurt, you're like, how come there's no doctor on board?
Right.
And I'm like, well, because technically they were just going to haul away some junk. So you know, Bashir wouldn't be there. To your point earlier about Nog's presence in this episode, what made it work well was the fact that, you know, when Garrick loses his mind and decides to kind of take Nog as a hostage, it gives O'Brien somebody to be worried about whether they live or die, right?
Totally.
Because if it was one of the other guys, he'd be like, I don't even know that guy. This is the first episode we worked together.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever. Well, he got transferred 2 weeks ago. What do I care?
Right. Right.
And it did make sense that they brought Nog along, because I kind of looked at the other four as well as Nog as the lower decks, so to speak.
Yeah.
So it would make sense that Nog would come along, because he is part of that lower decks crew. And I thought it was interesting that Nog was the only one of them in red and the only one to survive. It was the opposite of the red shirt. Yeah,
opposite day. Even though in my notes I did put four red shirts come along, because they're red shirts in spirit. You know, they're red shirts in spirit, even though they're wearing
all gold. Wearing gold, except for Nog, who's the because only one who survives.
Remember, the whole red shirt thing happened during the original series when the colors were switched, when the people that wore red were engineering and security and operations, and now that's gold. So actually, they were all technically red shirts, just with the switch color. But speaking of writing decisions, you know, the decision to have a doctor or not have a doctor, I noticed a writing decision that had to have been deliberate. You notice they mentioned at least twice that the people that came along on the mission were volunteering. They mentioned that two or three times, that they were volunteering. They kept saying that. And I think the reason for that is because they all died. And as a writer, they're probably thinking, we don't want to make our captain or whoever's making the decision look bad to send them off on just a junk salvaging mission where half the people or more than half the people die. Now, if they volunteer for it, then that absolves some of that kind of responsibility. And so I think that was probably a discussion that was had in the writer's room, where they're saying, look, we can't have him send them to their death for something so minor, or just something in hindsight where that we kind of go, ooh, boy, that's kind of a black mark on the record there. This way, if they volunteer, and they made sure to mention it two or three times. So I think that was a really smart decision, because that absolves any sort of, you know, looking back in hindsight and going, was that a good decision? Now, we know that in subsequent episodes, they actually embrace more of that dark side. They embrace more of Sisko, you know, killing people or sending people to their death. But that is a deliberate thing, rather than, you know, these kind of things where it's like not too hefty of an episode in the grand scheme of things. So I thought that was just an interesting
angle. There's really no way for Star Trek to get around having expendable people, because if Spock dies, they have this burial ceremony, everybody's crying, they shoot him in this casket, there's flags at half staff, and everything is, you know, 20 minutes of the movie is about that, right? Because it's one guy lost his life, and this is the guy we all love. But the Bolian guy in the background.
Hey, whoa, easy, easy. We like Bolians around. Yeah, you're right.
it was like, as soon as they were introduced, you knew that one or more of them were going to die. It was like, that was almost a given. And to Melissa's point about Lower Decks, I also had that same theory. I was like, well, this is like Lower Decks episode one.
Yeah. Right? And the final episode right there. They all died. First and last episode of Lower Decks right there for Deep Space Nine. But Strzok, I wanted to ask you about that a little bit, where I don't know, it doesn't seem like you were too terribly surprised when one or all of the non-essential characters died. You know, I don't think when I first watched this, I expected them all to die, but you do kind of figure, okay, there's a lot of expendable characters. They never introduce, you know, these expendable characters unless they're going to die. There's going to be some kind of, you know, terrible plot twist there. But I did want to ask you, because I picture this a lot of times when I'm watching these episodes, how you reacted when Garrick turned around and killed whoever it was, Pichetti, I think, because that was the big surprise. Who was it?
It was Amaro.
Amaro, right. That was the big twist. That's the thing we're not expecting, is for Garrick to turn around and be like, oh, by the way, you're dead too, punk.
Yeah, that was a big twist for me. But there was a small tell just before that that kind of lessened the impact for me. Mm-hmm. And the tell was when the hibernating Cardassian was about to make a kill. He did some kind of thing with his nostrils as if he was smelling something.
Oh, and, right.
And so I was like, oh, so there's like, I was like, what if there's some gas or something in the air that's he's smelling, or his senses are heightened in a way that he's smelling something. I was like, there's something here, like the fact that he's like smelling this guy about to kill him. So
that's not the face I make when I smell gas.
But so that was one little thing that gave it away for me. But it was a very good twist, because then I was like, oh, this is not what I was expecting. So yeah, it was a very good twist. I also like the idea that they had that kind of a chess game in this episode. Yeah. And he was trying to get him to play the chess game, and then they actually end up playing a real life chess game.
Yes.
Right. So yeah. I'm like, oh, I love that. I love that kind of, you know, small little foreshadowing with
the, yeah,
you know,
connections. The way they did that. There was another piece of foreshadowing too. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
There was another piece of foreshadowing that I wanted to bring up along those lines. And it was towards the beginning, when Garrick says, I think they're just going on to the runabout, which, by the way, I'm always surprised. I'm like, how big are these runabouts? I'm always surprised that, like, they have quarters and decks and all these things. Like,
yeah.
I'm used to shuttlecraft, but I guess a runabout is basically a runabout is in between a shuttlecraft and the Defiant. You know, it can house people and people can nap on it and stuff. But Garrick says, lately, everyone is starting to trust me. It's quite unnerving. Next thing you know, people are going to start inviting me over for dinner. And O'Brien says, well, if it makes you feel any better, I will never have you over. And Garrick goes, I appreciate that. Now, that's funny. That's cute. But there was foreshadowing there. It's basically, you know, Garrick saying, it's weird that everybody has been starting to trust me lately. So in other words, saying, all right, guys, let's not, you know, go hug and kiss Garrick just yet.
Yes. I wrote that down in my notes too. I thought it was a well said too. Andrew Robinson is another person who has a very unique way of saying things.
Totally.
Whereas it's almost impossible to duplicate. He has that, you know, it's slightly charming. It's slightly dismissive. It has this air of so many different things when he says things. So I just love the way he portrays Garrick. But yes, that was another moment in which, you know, the writers are telling us, this is the direction we're about to go in, right?
Yes.
And you brace yourself for it. But even after that, even with that, I still was kind of taken back by the fact that Garrick turned and then started killing people, right? And I also think it's kind of strange, because at the end he was like, yeah, tell what's his name, his wife, that, you know, my bad.
What's his name? Tell what's his name, my bad.
Yeah, tell what's his name's wife, my bad, you know? It's like,
oh,
really?
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's, I get it. He was infected with the psychotropic drug that only infects Cardassians, and you don't know how that's going to go. You know, change his physiology and neuro pathway or whatever. But and I get it, and there would be guilt there. And I think that it's a nice contrast to show that Garrick isn't innately a psychopathic killer, that he does have, you know, other emotions beyond, you know, I just hate everyone, and I'm a big curmudgeon, but you know.
I want to like just edit a tiny little clip of Melissa saying, "I hate everyone and I'm a giant curmudgeon," and that's it. Like no context. Post that, people will be like, "What has gotten into you, Melissa?"
And we're giant curmudgeon.
There was another line that I liked, Garrick, when one of the lower deckers was saying, you know, he was talking about the 3rd Battalion, 1st Division, or whatever mm-hmm. that group of Cardassian soldiers were in. And he was like, their motto is 3 words, death to all, you know. And Garrick comes in, 3 words, but it says, you know, the way he's like,
he's admiring the guy. He's admiring it.
And it's just like he's like the guy to narrate something. He's the guy that you're like I want to listen to him talk because he's so good at just making things sound appetizing. You know, here I am like looking at death to all and hearing it like, yeah, it does have a simplicity to it or something.
Those,
you know,
3 little words that everybody wants to hear. Also. Speaking of the end there was something at the end that was also very funny and clever, you know, like even in an episode like this, there's humor. When Garrick says, you know, if I was any closer, that phaser would have killed me. And Chief O'Brien says, well, don't take this the wrong way, but that was the plan. And then Garrick just says, yeah, I understand. Chief says, see you around. And that's it. No handshake, no sorry, buddy, no whatever. He's like, I understand. You were trying to kill me. And Chief's like, yeah. Chief, there's no my bad from Chief. He's just like, yeah, I was. See you.
Survival. You know.
Bye.
Yeah. And the other one, there was like a moment too where Chief had a corny line, but I liked it. When he, you know, Garrick says, let me see your gun. And he says, do you have another one? And he pulls up the other one and he says, ah, how clever, and da 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 da. And then they go through that whole fight scene. And then Chief detonates the thing that he had, you know, the weapon that he brought. And he says something like, I'm an engineer.
I know. I'm not a soldier. I'm an engineer.
Yeah, that is such a. That's such like an 80s or 90s line, but that's what this is. This was 90s, but
It was a little cheesy, 90s. But I kind of liked it a little bit because it's like, I beat you with science.
She blinded me with science.
Exactly. So I kind of liked that little, and that was the check. That was the chess of them, right? That was the check.
The back and forth, the contra.
I made you disarm yourself. I got one up on you, and he's like, well, I got one up on you, and then back and forth. So that chess checkers kind of matchup was pretty fun to watch.
And not to go back to Nog, but
when
he's playing the contra against Garrick, and the look on his face.
He thinks he's playing Tonga.
He's like,
Tongo. Sorry. It's Tongo, right? Not Tonga. I always get those mixed up.
Tonga?
Sorry. Please continue. Tongo.
Tongo. Yeah, I don't know.
No, but the look on his face, though. Because
he was so intent and focused in the game in protecting his assets.
Yes.
Dealing and dealing. It was so great. And see two different species, two different cultures playing a game against each other with two very different strategies of approaching that game. So cool.
All right, we got to go to our free-for-all in just a second here, but speaking of protecting our assets, we want to give a very special thank you to Carmen, a.k.a. Skillet, TJ Jackson Bay out in Missouri, Bill Victor Arukin, Yvette Blackman, Tom, Homer Freezy out somewhere in New Yeezy, Eve England out in Wales, Dr. Anne-Marie Siegel, Titus Moeller, Tim Baum, Dr. Susan B. Gruner, John Mann, Mark Rocco, Darlena Marie, and Rex 4A Wood.
Wood.
We'll see you on the other side. We're going to hit the free-for-all right now. And always remember the seventh rule.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Seventh Rule. This is the free-for-all. We are joined today by Homer Freezy out somewhere in New Yeezy. We've got Eve England out in Wales. Sirach Lofton, you know well. Melissa Longo, you know well. We have Dr. Susan V. Gruner. Rex A. Wood is driving between Philadelphia and Delaware right now. Just get probably somewhere in Kentucky. And Dr. Anne-Marie Siegel. Here we go. This is the classroom edition. So everybody be good.
I thought you were going to say, when I say your name, please say present.
Yes, here.
Here.
Oh, that's great.
That's how we used to do it in school. Roll call. Present here.
I just wish somebody could be up on that screen in the corner up there. You see?
Oh,
wait,
fun.
You see that? Wait.
That could be screen? Where the episode is.
Yeah, but I can't. I try to put. So look, she can't. Oh wait, there we go.
Whoa!
There we are.
Whoa!
All right,
we should have 3D. That playing in the background.
Yeah, so everybody that's listening in and doesn't know what the hell we're going on about, that's what British people say. They say, what are you going on about?
No, what are you on about?
I can't keep up. So we're just screwing around with what the picture looks like. It looks like we're in a classroom. But anyway, let's talk about this episode a little bit more. Homer Freezy out somewhere in New Yeezy. We know you've got some interesting observations to toss our way.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun, and in parts it was very, very scary. The music certainly contributed to that, and I don't know where I went. I'm over there. And then you always know it's either a crime scene investigation or it's a horror film when people start flashing flashlights in your eyeballs.
True.
Yeah, and they did a great job.
You would have never doctor. Known.
Oh, right. Which can be scary, but not as
or you're
scary
being pulled
as this
over.
Episode. Okay, perhaps you'll tell us about that later.
Yeah.
I'm glad you highlighted the music, Homer. It definitely was a good accent on this episode. It drove emotions.
Yeah. And I looked to see the director, and I'm blanking on his name, but at first I thought it might be Kim Friedman, but it was
Michael
not.
Vahar. I did think
you know,
that too.
He also directed the first Brian Fuller episode that we had. This
right.
is the second.
Right. Light in
He's
the dark.
Prolific.
Whoa.
Ah.
Here we are.
Oh my gosh, after school.
We're back.
Detention. So
school's out forever.
Eve England, you always have some goodies from the Deep Space Nine Companion. Do you have any today for us? Oh, and by the way, check out Eve England's awesome mug that she's got just for Halloween. Look at that.
That, so prepared.
You can get that at Abyssinian Kiosk. That is Sirach's sister's website. It's really cool. Also, the shirt she's wearing is from Abyssinian Kiosk. There it is, gorgeous. The shirt that Homer Freezy is wearing is from Abyssinian Kiosk as well.
I love that one.
That one is really cool. Someone else
so cool.
had that too. Was it you, Sue?
Yeah. I don't think so.
I thought I saw
I've got
third.
That one in pink and blue.
I have.
Rock has one like it.
Walking art made by Melissa bracelets everywhere as well. So check those out. All those in the description box below. Actually, Sirach, I noticed you're wearing a good friend of ours as well.
Oh, yeah. You see what it is. Rocking that afro knot.
Mm-hmm. So check all that
shirts.
Out. That's in the description box. Well, Anne-Marie, it looks like you're probably wearing.
Cool Ferengi eye. sweatshirt and slouchy.
Very nice. That is at our Teespring website. You can find all this stuff in the description box below.
With a discount.
With a discount. Discounts is two. Eve England, please continue.
Yeah, there's...
Sorry, Melissa's also... I see the very top of a head from Melissa.
Oh, yeah. It's a
manga. Yeah. That's also walking art made by Melissa. Eve England, I swear to God, that's the last time I'm going to interrupt you.
Yeah, there's a couple of... Obviously, the companion is always full of little gems. So it's interesting that, you know, this is what counted as one of those scary episodes. They deliberately wanted to transform the station into a haunted house. That was a deliberate thing that they did, obviously, to set the scene. And one of the main things they did with that, which I don't think I would have noticed had I not known that before. So the main thing that they did was replace the geometric carpet in the promenade with what they called a boring gray carpet, because they also wanted it to look a bit like ice.
So they changed
the whole carpet with that sort of gray to make it look a bit icy as well. So I thought that was really clever, and when I knew that, it was quite obvious then, but I don't think I would have spotted it generally, so that was really cool. And the second point, which was really interesting, and I think which really does add to it, so you know the bit where Garrick is stalking the two officers, And they're sort of talking about their partners being killed, and they even mentioned the spoonheads. So what they were saying that originally it wasn't scripted dialogue. It was just supposed to just be dialogue that you weren't supposed to hear. It was just sort of filler dialogue that they created. And then they were surprised then that you could actually hear it. So they had to get extra approval, but it didn't go through the same channel. So they said that had that been in the original script, it probably wouldn't have made it through the vetting because of, you know, you're not used to seeing Starfleet officers using racial slurs. But they said that actually it really added to the intensity of the scene when, you know, showing that they really had a bad day and that they were really struggling with this whole situation. So it sort of added that context. So I thought that was really interesting that, you know, that's, I think it's, they said it's the first time you hear a Starfleet officer using that term. But that it was by accident, really. It wasn't intended. You weren't intending to hear that at all when they first shot it. So, but I thought that was a really good way of really adding that intensity to the whole scene.
So, how familiar were these officer actors to ad-lib that?
Yeah.
Well, no, it was done on an ADR loop. So yeah. It was done post. It was done in post.
So they scripted it,
or Rick Berman. So, and then when they saw it, they were like, "I don't know if this is a good idea because it's a Starfleet officer saying a racial slur." So, but then they let it go because, and I read up about this last night. So, but then they let it go because it spoke to the truth of the drama that was happening and the trauma that was going on in the situation. So that's why they let it slide.
And what's really, because what that really made me think about is how many more pieces of dialogue do the writers write for those scenes that are never intended to be heard by anyone? That might get lost along the way, that, you know, that's an example of a piece of dialogue that they never intended to be on the screen, but which was really great dialogue. I thought that was just it was a really interesting story, and I'm glad they kept that in because I think it did add a lot to it.
I felt like that I heard stuff like that about three or four times in this episode too. They kept doing that in this episode. Like there was, when they were walking onto the runabout as well, and a couple of the main characters were like talking, you know, maybe it was Garrick and O'Brien or something like that, but we could hear them kind of shuffling around in the background, and they had their own little conversations, and it did feel very unscripted in a way. So I was wondering about that, and it feels like that wasn't the only scene that they added, you know, ADR to, but maybe it was, but that, you know, I felt like that was kind of a running theme that I noticed in that episode. That's really interesting.
Kind of like a dark Lower Decks episode.
Yeah. It definitely had Lower Decks vibes, didn't it?
Yeah.
Well, Sue, have you seen this episode recently?
Yeah, about 20 minutes ago, I finished it.
Doesn't get more recent than that.
Yeah, what timing? Did you remember it well from when you had seen it before, or were the twists still big twists for you?
Nope. The notes that I took, what did I do with them? Oh, right in front of me. I wrote that I love the use of the light, or lack thereof. It made it very dark, like he was talking about. I really love those outside shots of the station. They were
tilted a little.
Love that.
I don't remember them doing that before.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering also, why didn't they see the life forms before they went on the station?
That's my nitpick. What on the stations?
They didn't scan for life forms. Why wouldn't they do that?
Oh. Yeah, I've been wondering if, like, if you're in a stasis tube, if they for some reason couldn't pick it up.
I don't know.
Hmm.
But if I was
I thought about that too.
They assumed bulls were going to be there, but
right. That's true.
I would definitely.
Hilarious.
Anne Marie, on a scale of one. On a scale of 1 to 10, what did you give this one, Anne-Marie?
Obviously a 10. So good. But I also really love the addition of, I mean, obviously there's so many amazing parts and pieces, but I really love the use of the psychotropic drugs and looking at the use of that in soldiers. And I think they experimented with that a lot, like at least in World War II. And when you're watching European and British television, it comes up a lot in like episodes where they're talking about previous wars and like, or people finding it in attics of like grandparents who had passed away, left over from World War II. So it's interesting. It doesn't come up on American television as much, but obviously it makes, I mean, if you're taking a bunch of stimulants so that you can stay awake and keep guard of things, it makes you like a lot more aggressive. And I thought it was a really cool addition to this episode. And it's not really fair to the soldiers either, obviously, which I wish they, I mean, obviously I don't wish they had delved into that part of like, that's not really fair to these like Cardassian soldiers that they took over their lives and did that to them. I don't know if they volunteered for it, but it kind of adds to the Cardassian culture that that's acceptable.
Right. Right. I wonder if that was a nod to things that have happened in the past in our own history where, because I mean, we certainly have a history of testing things out on people, on soldiers and civilians, and kind of just trying to be like, well, how do we make our soldiers better at what we want them to do? You know, they signed a contract, right? They signed a waiver.
It was actually on Call the Midwife this week, the episode that came out like in America even.
Are there new
stimulants? Yeah, it just started this week. Not with new stimulants, like not with stimulants, but in terms of like soldiers exposed to radiation and not telling them, like all these kind of things are really, and like hiding the records, and that's not what they signed up for, and then they don't know. And so I saw a lot of similarities to that with whatever happened to these Cardassian soldiers. And obviously it's no surprise to Garrick, and he's able to make the leap of what's going on with them pretty fast.
Hey, where did Rex go?
Super interesting.
He dropped out of school.
Right. Maybe I should put it back on the school view. We left.
He transferred.
Let's see. Rex, we're doing.
He transferred classes. He didn't like the professor.
Rex, are you?
He got sent to the principal's office.
Yeah.
Or he was checked. Passed to go to the bathroom.
Are you down here? Maybe he's over here somewhere. Okay.
You know, it's funny because you mentioned the psychotropic thing, Anne-Marie, and I was just brought my mind back to the word that I just kind of did a little research on recently, and it was berserk. And when people say to go berserk, is actually referring to a group of people known as the berserkers, who were these warriors that would fight in this kind of a wild trance-like rage. And it's been, you know, thought about whether they were either in a trance from meditation or if they were actually taking mind altering substances that would make them kind of fight in that kind of a way. But I think that there is some truth to how, you know, governments experiment with different either truth-telling things or try to make advanced soldiers that are able to fight forever or fight more violently. So this is definitely something that's realistic for me watching this episode. Definitely was a horror episode, so it was kind of right on time for the month of October.
Yeah. Awesome.
I like the fact that, you know.
Well, we didn't. We were actually thanking Deep Space Nine for having the foresight to do this 24 years ago for us. Yeah, they are so good. They are so good.
They knew we were going to do this. And did the classroom people know designing that they would do Starfleet colors?
I was wondering that.
Good knowledge. Good knowledge. So here's a fun.
There was something really quick. Yeah, no, I just wanted to mention this. There was a word that came up twice in this episode that I just thought was hilarious. The first time it came up, Odo said it. The second time, the Bolian said it. And the word is booby trap. Mm-hmm. Okay. Odo said something like, yeah, the place is booby trapped. And I laughed out loud. I couldn't. I thought
Star
it was hilarious.
Loves that term. There even episodes called it.
Yeah. And then the Bolian says something. I was like, Bolian booby traps. I actually wrote that down, but is there no other way to describe it? But booby trap, like, is booby trap like the only way? There's no thesaurus on that.
All right, here we go. Let's find out.
Or you could say it the way the Goonies say it, and it's called booty trap. Either way,
I want to know the etiology of booby trap.
Didn't people used to be called boobies if they fall for something?
Yeah, where did this terminology come from, Homer?
I think it was a type of bird.
Yeah, that's
a not very a right type of bird.
A blue-footed booby?
That could be.
Yeah, there really isn't a different word for booby trap unless you're talking about the specific trap itself, in which case they say like landmine or mouse trap. Or setup, or tripwire, like, or pitfall.
Right. So there's no real synonym there.
Not that I can find or can think of, no.
Apparently.
The word burpee has been used since the late 17th century to mean fool or idiot.
Actually, now that Sue, that you had mentioned the blue-footed booby, I kind of remember from like a science class that maybe, like a lot of birds have tricks for each other. I kind of remember there was maybe like a trick with booby like nests to trick other birds about eggs and nests or something. Mm-hmm.
Well,
have to look it up.
From the origin and meaning grammar monster site, it says in the late 17th century, hungry sailors would set a trap for seabirds known as boobies. The term booby trap was literally a trap for a booby. However, it has evolved to mean a harmful device designed to be triggered by its unsuspecting victim.
Interesting.
Yeah, Wikipedia says something similar, but apparently there's an old English word, which is booby, which just means a stupid person or slow bird. And they said that it was originally a term used for schoolboy pranks, but became a booby trap as we know it now, based on sinister events and things it says in World War One, apparently. So that's when it had its connotations from a military perspective. But yeah, I don't think there's another word that you can use.
Someone in the writer's room in Star Trek, like, love that word. Yeah. TNG all the time.
Hey, Rex, I just want to say you haven't missed much. We've been talking about boobies for the last 10 minutes. So, you know.
That was the principle.
8008.
We've been Googling booby.
You were putting it on your calculator. And we were passing it around in the classroom.
I pulled off the road, though.
Oh, nice.
I'm at a gas station. I'm at a Shell station.
We have a few minutes left. Rex, do you remember this episode? Have you seen it recently? Do you remember the MPOC War? Oh, cool. Any thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, I'm sure it's been mentioned, but at the beginning of it, where Garak is like, everybody's beginning to trust me now.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, okay, you gain the trust. And then at the end of the episode with the psychogenic gas, he now goes nuts and he's trying to kill everybody. So it's like, I just gained this confidence of everybody, and now I just blew it because of the psychogenic gas that came out. So yeah, I mean, it's actually one of my top probably 20 episodes I like.
Nice.
Really, it was kind of exciting, a lot going on through it. And then of course, just the beginning where, you know, that they're working on the coupler. And, you know, it sounded like a lot quieter back then, you know? So absolutely. Nice. But yeah, good episode. Really good episode.
Cool. Cool. You know what we forgot to play? Jake Sisko guesses the IMDb score.
Oh, whoa. I forgot that.
Rex just reminded us.
Yeah, I like this episode. I'm hoping it was an 8.2.
8.2? That's too low.
Yeah, I think it's higher than that.
I think it is too.
You think it's higher?
I don't know.
It should be. It should be.
I cheated.
Yeah, Melissa cheated. Everybody who cheated, you could tell because they're going like,
no comment.
It's a 7.9, which was very close.
Oh, boo.
We need to go on IMDb more and rate these.
Yeah, we need to re-rate that. Yeah.
That needs a higher. It's got to go over 8.
I feel it's worth a 10 at least for that like amazing moment of Garrick at the end where he's
a 10 at least.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
Or like it's just like that amazing moment where Garrick at the end like asks O'Brien to talk to that guy's family. And that's just, like such a beautiful moment to see that like Garrick really does have a heart.
Well, as Sirach put it, he said, yeah, tell what's his name's wife my bad.
Yes. So, but still, he's so compassionate.
that's what I felt at the end. I was like,
my bad or whatever.
Tell her my bad. Send her a fruit basket with my name.
Oh yeah, Jared, cool.
Oh, fruit basket.
Yeah, asking for fruit baskets for people.
I never saw that game that he was playing either.
I love when Star Trek makes up games. I want it to be like Chutes and Ladders or Risk or something.
Oh, Risk.
Chutes and Ladders?
Is it about protecting your assets? What was it, a business game?
Oh, I thought it was about a battle. Yeah.
It was a war game, but Nog was playing it.
It was a battle, yes.
It says
battleship.
It says it's envisioned to be a cross between chess and Stratego. I don't know.
Oh, fun. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, is it Stratego, this one?
No, that's Stratagemma.
Oh, that's Stratagem. Yeah, okay.
I sketch of it in the book.
Cool.
Yeah, I want to play.
I envision lots of pieces.
We got to play these games. We got to like get them licensed by Star Trek and create these games.
And then that's do the tournaments.
Yeah.
Cool. I play solitaire tournaments.
Wow.
I do actually. You can play like double and triple. And then we have boards at my house for like years of who's winning every game.
Speaking of board. All right. So I guess... that's it. We do have to run. You guys escaped. I had a fun question planned, but I guess, you know, is that psychotropic drug or gas?
What does your shirt say, Ryan? Because I've been looking at it this whole time.
Oh, it's just like
me too.
It's making me feel like I had a psychotropic drug.
Is it a bandana? Yeah. It
makes me feel just like a bunch of, it's just a Deadpool. Bunch of bodies. Yeah.
Is it Deadpool?
No. Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty.
Yeah. It says dead on it, right?
Yeah,
oh, Deadpool.
Like to match the
Deadpool.
Episode?
Yeah.
Okay. No, but so the question was that this psychotropic drug brings out the worst in people. So I was going to say, if you were on Impact-Nor and this thing affected humans and it brought out the worst in you, what would that trait be? But you guys have been saved by the bell today. Because you guys are like, thinking like, I don't know if I want to divulge that.
I'd be eating too much junk food. That would be the worst for me. Sirach, you ate all the ice cream.
Girl, same.
All the jump jaw sticks.
It's this drug I'm on.
I was gonna say, did you grow up in my house? Because that was all the cheddar.
Oh, the Cheetos. Where's the Cheetos from?
Sharp cheddar.
Oh my god, so, what is the show getting sponsored by Cheetos?
We'll save this maybe for next week. So you guys we can, you guys, you've got your homework ahead of you. So, you know,
you know what a thought would be, just to leave everybody with, is to think about what would be a lineup if you were to do Star Trek Halloween Horror Week. What episodes would you
Can that be our round table?
Yeah.
Can that be an October round table?
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a good October. Idea.
Something to think about. Because this episode made me feel like it was definitely would be in the commercial for the, you know, Fright Fest, Halloween, Star Trek. You
know, and then, the other really fun fact about this episode is that Ryan has hard drives, and one of them is called, isn't it called Deep Space Nine? And then you have another one, and it's called Empok Nor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, way back in the day.
Did you put dorky stickers on your hard drive?
The first thing, the first thing way back in the day when we had those thumb drives, remember everybody used to have thumb drives? I got an orange thumb drive, my first one, and I called it Nog. And I always forgot to tell Aaron that.
Oh, but
this was like 15 years ago, and you know, because it could fit on, I could write NOG, you know, right on that little orange thumb drive. And this was many years before I even met him. Then I got a big, you know, external hard drive, and I called it Deep Space Nine. Actually, it's right here, Deep Space Nine. I guess not that big, but
mine's orange.
Big storage. Oh, that's cool. And then, I recently got another one, and I'm like, well, how do you follow up Deep Space Nine? And so that one is obviously called Empok Nor. Empok Nor.
That's the evil
you
one.
Can't see it. It's plugged in. Anyway, we do have to run, but thank you all very much for joining us. Homer, Sue, Melissa, of course, hooray. Eve England, Rex A. Wood, Anne-Marie Siegel, for Aaron Eisenberg and Sirach Lofton. We do want to thank you for joining us, and always remember the seventh rule.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.